Baby. Driving. No purchase necessary.
You're listening to Radio Free Urbanism.
Hello and welcome back to Radio Free Urbanism. I am your host, Alex Williams, and I am delighted to be joined today by two wonderful, delightful, and exquisite people. Nick Laporte, say hi.
Hello and welcome back, everybody.
And unfortunately, we weep because Ethan is not with us today, and we miss him dearly. But in his stead, we are joined once again by the fantastic Jen Hall.
Nice to see you all again.
It's good to have you back. Thanks for doing this on such short notice. Ethan shattered our hearts when he said he couldn't make it today because I miss him dearly. People don't know this, but Ethan and I actually go way, way back to preschool. We've known each other for decades and maybe centuries. So we're gonna let that lie ferment in people's heads, and you can make up fan theories about us. It'll be fun. It'll be cool. But with that, let's get into the show with some fun updates. Nick, what do you have for us?
Well, it was just the last Friday of the month, which means critical mass happened across the world. Maybe it was called bike party in some. I saw in Baltimore. I think it's called. They call it a bike party. I don't know. They call it different things. But critical mass happened. And I went, as I tried to do many months, but it was the first time I got to go for the entire critical mass in a very long time. I think since last September and October, I've gone for like little stints, but I haven't actually been able to partake, which has been a lot of fun, which is where people in the community come around, come together, get on their bikes and take to the streets, because you're allowed to do that. And it's kind of a celebration, but also a protest for better bike infrastructure and to have safer streets, which is great. So we went riding around town. We went to different spots. We hit up one spot where there's a relatively new ghost bike where sadly a cyclist was killed in Vancouver on Clark near 10th Avenue. And we had a small vigil for this person and a moment of silence. But farther along the way, the police started following us just to be kind of a liaison. What would you call that? Escort, I would say, at the back of our ride. Just for protection and safety. And at some moment, somebody started honking incessantly. Like, I mean, just holding on to the horn constantly and just wouldn't stop laying on this horn. So I started filming. I pulled up my phone and started pointing it behind us. Like, who is this guy? It went for several blocks. Like, it was several minutes it was going. So he's still doing it. We were turning down another street. The police are there behind us, and he's in this red PT Cruiser still honking. And there's someone else honking and honking like, over and over, but he's just holding on to it. And then he jumps out of his car, and I've stopped to just film. So I'm like there by myself. Everybody's keeps moving. The police officer is in their car behind me. And the guy starts walking towards me, and I just say, "What are you going to do?" And he goes, "Hey, where's that guy with the beard?" He's like, "Where's the guy with the beard?" And then the police officer, you can hear him yelling to this man. He says, "Sir, please get back in your car." He's like, "Where's the guy with the beard?" And what I like what the police officer said to him, he said, "They have as much right to protest as you do to honk your horn incessantly. Please go back to your car." So the guy eventually turned around and took off and went back to his car. But I really appreciated the police's response in this situation, you know, because the police do get a lot of flack for different reasons, and rightly so. Like we talked about, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, they were anyway, it was just, I had a positive experience with the police, and I appreciated that. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I think that is really, really positive. Especially, I mean, somebody in a red PT Cruiser, famously the coolest car on planet Earth.
great taste.
But yeah, that's good that there was that escort. I also kind of think, I mean, the escort, like you see that a lot with protests, that there will be police nearby because, you know, tensions are high with people on varying sides of an issue. But it is a little bit frustrating to feel like, oh, I need the police to help me ride my bike and to kind of help me stay safe and sane, you know. And I hope that these critical mass rides and other efforts that we make in this kind of urbanist community to make our streets safer and more comfortable and happier and more livable will eventually result in us not needing to do that, in us just being like, yeah, I'm just getting around places because this is how I get around places, you know, like, let's make it not a big deal. I think hopefully someday we can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Jen, did you have anything to say about Critical Mass?
Yeah, I attended the Calgary Critical Mass. A really great turnout. I feel like it's going to get bigger and bigger as the summer goes on, because we restarted the Calgary Critical Mass last fall, just at the mm-hmm. end of summer and into fall. It hadn't been done in several years, and that had decent pickup, but really great. We had enough people where we were led onto Memorial Drive, which is a pretty major road that lead people into downtown Calgary, and then through the downtown and over to 17th Ave, which is a really busy space on evenings and weekends. Lots of bars, restaurants, arguably potentially one of the best, could be a really great pedestrian place. And I think Alex will touch on that in a bit in the same episode here. But yeah, really great. For the most part, it's people honking because they think it's fun. They're cheering us on, and we have really wonderful people that, you know, stop folks from running us over if the light turns. Those are called corkers. They cork the intersections if the light's not quite long enough for all the bikes. So that's always a great time. Yeah, overall, great experience, and I can't wait for the rest of the summer. Alex, I hope you can make it to the next one.
I hope. Well, I work Fridays. I work every Friday, and so it's I've wanted to make it to one. I almost made it to the one that happened. I think it was during the public hearing, right. But I was so wiped. I was off that day. That was like the first Friday I've not worked in over a year. And I was so wiped that I was like, I'm not riding all the way downtown and participating as much as I'd like to. But I will eventually. But speaking of 17th Avenue, though, there are talks about pedestrianization. I think we've covered it a little bit on the show, some of the drama that went on around the idea of closing this street to cars, this main street to cars. Like Jen said, this is the place in Calgary. If you're looking for nightlife, if you're looking for bars, this is pretty much the only place you look. Calgary has a lot of, we've got great restaurants in a variety of places around the city, but as far as nightlife goes, this is kind of the place. There is a survey that has been put out by the Beltline Neighborhood Association. Beltline is the area of the city. It's a community, but it's kind of the most dense community in Calgary. I'll share my screen here so you can see this this survey page. So this is their survey page that they made. They want to create 17th Avenue open street, and I'll touch on this again later in the episode, kind of what that actually could look like. But if you see here, and this is for Calgary people, obviously, you can take the survey and you can kind of talk about what you'd like to see there. I've got to reshare my screen because I went onto the survey page. So this is what the survey looks like. Some of the questions they're asking is, how often do you visit? They're going to ask for your postal code so that they kind of weight the local responses, like people who actually live in Beltline. Those are going to be weighted more because that's your neighborhood. Whereas for somebody like me, who I pop down there maybe a few times a month, my opinion obviously matters less than the people who live in the area. And they ask you, what kind of businesses do you visit? How do you get there? How do you get around while you're there? How much do you spend? All of this stuff. So they're collecting some great information. One of the coolest things that they're talking about, though, is, okay, how much are we going to pedestrianize potentially for this 2025 so-called pilot project? And the options are 4th to 5th, 5th to 7th, or 4th to 7th, 4th to 8th, and 4th to 11th. I, of course, chose option D. I think the more we pedestrianize, the better. But there's been some great articles written about this. Paula Tran has written a few really well-researched, thoughtful articles I'll link those down in the show notes. But yeah, definitely make sure that if you're a Calgarian, make sure you fill out this survey and help us pedestrianize a street that should have been pedestrianized a long time ago, at the very least for kind of what they're suggesting here, which is Fridays to Sundays. Because, hey, those are the days that people really want to get out and just enjoy it, right? We've got these patios sitting out front there that they put up every summer. But then if you got to listen to people rev their engines as they're going through, you're breathing in their exhaust fumes. It's not a great time, right? But there are a lot of great restaurants that people want to and should be able to comfortably enjoy.
It's just wild to see the pushback that these kind of things get everywhere. Like even in Vancouver, we're trying to pedestrianize Gastown, just two small blocks in the most kind of touristy places in the city. And already we're seeing, it hasn't even happened yet. We're already getting pushback, but it's crazy like to think that only this is one street from one to five blocks of stretch or something like that.
Yeah.
To just close that off 3 days a week. Right. Mm-hmm. And then when you want to bike lane on a main road so that you're safer, they say, oh, you got a bike street, two streets over. And you're like, you got another street to drive on, one street over. They're everywhere. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
one street.
Well, and the interesting thing with the 17th Ave pedestrianization, people say, well, where am I going to park? I mean, honestly, if you're going to 17th Avenue, if you're visiting the businesses on 17th Avenue and you're parking on 17th Avenue, you're a crazy person. Like, I don't know why you would do that, because there's already not much parking, because one, that's all street parking there. Two, in the summer, we've already got these sidewalk extensions and patio extensions. So those are already taking up so much parking. We're actually, with unsprawling, we're going to go through and actually count up how many parking stalls would end up being removed to figure out how much parking there is. But even along here, let me, I'll share my screen again so you can see this. Along here, you can see there is more parking in behind. Like, it's not like all the parking is going to disappear, not to mention the street parking on the streets, right? Like, there's more parking right here than there is in front here, right? You can see these sidewalk extensions that take up the street there. And so I think, yeah, like, guys, let's let the space be for people. Because we're already moving in that direction. And I don't think we should just keep fighting against that, especially when this is for everybody. Everybody gets to enjoy this if we continue going down this path instead of just people who happen to drive and often just drive through the area, not staying, not stopping, not spending any time there. So yeah, that's my update. So hopefully this goes well. I'll have the links to that in the description, and then hopefully any Calgarians who listen to this podcast, I know there are a few, can make sure they fill that out and share it with people, share it around a little bit. But with that, let's get on to our first story. Nick, take us away.
This is coming from British Columbia, the province in which I reside. So new rules will protect vulnerable. I can't say vulnerable. It's twisting my tongue right now. Here, vulnerable. I got it. Road users. So starting Monday, June 3rd, 2024, that was just this week, drivers must keep new minimum distances from people walking and riding on roads in British Columbia. And these new rules are made to protect vulnerable road users, requiring drivers to keep at least 1 meter away when passing. The details here, 1 meter on highways with speeds of 50 kilometers an hour or less, and 1 meter and a half on highways with speeds of 51 kilometers or more. They say highways. It's a roadway. It's a strode. It's a street. It's anywhere, essentially, that you're going to be sharing a street with people who are outside of a car, vulnerable road users. And the maximum actual penalties are $2,000 and 6 months in jail. Now, the reason why I brought this up is not because I think it's a great idea. Obviously, this is something we need. We need it to be safer. I have a short. I might have mentioned it in the past. It's about Granville Island, and I was riding my bike to Granville Island, turned off the bike lane onto the street because there's no bike lane into Granville Island, and a BMW closed past me just to get in front of me and brake. And it was scary. It was like a, whatever, a small moment. If he hit me, I probably would have maybe fallen off, kind of got hurt. It wouldn't have been fatal or anything, but it was scary. And I always get comments on this video, people telling me, get off the road, move out of the way, right? It's like, we need safe spaces for people, right? And we need people to feel safe in these spaces. But the thing I wanted to really talk about is, how does this actually change the mentality of drivers? And not only that, but their actual actions on the street. And my first thought is, it's not going to change anything. And I think it comes down to, will these things get enforced? Because I don't know how it is in Calgary. In Vancouver, the joke, or at least the meme, is that Vancouver police really don't enforce anything. Like, it's just lawless out here. And I've talked about it on the podcast when I was talking to Lucy Maloney from Melbourne. And I've talked to my friends talking about how it is in Australia, where it's so strict with the police. You could be on a bicycle, you're speeding on an electric scooter, you're going to get a ticket. You know, you're going down a street in the CBD. If you're going 3 kilometers over, that machine is going to take a picture of your car and you're going to get a ticket in the mail. It's super strict. Here, it's the complete opposite. It's just a free for all. And it's so rare that you even see a speed trap set up. So I highly doubt this is going to be enforced. But I do think what's going to happen is, this is going to be like a post-mortem thing, where if someone does get hit by a car who's on the side of a road, then it'll be something that's added on, which is like too little too late, in my opinion. But anyway, what do you guys think?
Yeah, Jen, what do you think? I know you cycle around a fair bit.
Yeah, I'd say it's similar in that I haven't observed a lot of enforcement. And that's partially through, you know, I'm a pretty solid rule follower, as it were. So when I first started riding around on my electric longboard and then scooter and now the bike, you know, I'm looking up the bylaws and laws and trying to figure out, like, what can I do? But over time, I've sorted out, you know, it's like, they don't, unless I'm actually agitating people, they don't really stop you if you're on the sidewalk when you shouldn't be on the sidewalk. It's so, you know, I, at least for myself, I've taken the approach of, what's the best all around scenario? Is it safer to be on the sidewalk on this particular stretch? I'm taking the sidewalk, as long as I'm being respectful, et cetera, et cetera. But that also means that I really don't think there's a lot of enforcement. Like, the police, if they see some sort of close pass, are they even noticing it? Probably not. I don't think it's top of mind, right? Because even they have to triage, like, what needs my attention the most? They have a lot on their plate, to be honest. And I really wish that traffic enforcement wasn't even on the list. Like, the police should be focused on, you know, murders and theft and, I don't know, police.
Yeah, I kind of think a lot of traffic enforcement should be done by the road design in the first place, right? Yes. I was speeding and I veered off the road and I hit a post and it totaled my car. Like, that should be the traffic enforcement, not like, oh, shoot, there goes a guy on this super, super wide road. Why is he driving so fast? Do you know what the speed limit is here? Well, I don't know, officer, but it sure feels like 100 kilometers an hour, right? Like, I think that's part of the problem. But I like what you said, Jen, about the need for making judgments, right? Making a judgment call of what is going to be safest for me and other users of this space. And so for me, the route that I bike to get to work, there's this stretch on this one main road that needs a bike lane. Like, it needs a bike lane. I will tend to ride on the road for the first stretch, but then it gets into like a slight incline. And shortly after it gets into the slight incline, I actually need to turn left, which is kind of a frustrating thing to do when you're road cycling. And so what I do in that case is, when it's safe to do so, I will actually just cut across and I'll get up onto the sidewalk on the other side. So I'll start off on the road and I'll get some speed and I'll get moving. And I'll say most drivers are respectful. They hang back. They wait till it's safe to pass. I see this regularly. But then Once I know that I'm going to be slowing down because of the slope, I'll move over onto the sidewalk and I'll be very respectful and I'll be slow and cautious around pedestrians. And then I have a multi-use path. So it really it depends on where I'm at and stuff, but it is a little bit frustrating, because it does feel like, because the police are there, and a lot of the time they are there to do road enforcement. But I'm not sure, how they think of, you know, the close passing, right? Like, will they take the time to give a ticket for somebody close passing, or even at the very least to pull that person over and be like, I'm going to make you wait now, behind me, and tell you off because what you did was dangerous. So I don't really know. That's kind of a rant that, no, I, that
absolutely.
I went
You're totally
on,
but. Right. I think what you said, I really like that. It's about the built environment, and that's what this all comes down to. We need to keep hammering it out. It's not about getting the police to sick it on, people in cars that are breaking the laws. It's about making our environment safer so that it's easier to not be unsafe on the road. Now, what is curious about this is actual bike lanes, not bike lanes, but bike stripes, door zone bike lanes, gutter bike lanes, just the stripes on the road, the paint on the road that's not infrastructure, that creates a situation that puts drivers closer to cyclists. So
yes,
Tom from Shifter made a great video about this a while ago, and he collected some data to see how close drivers would pass if there was a bike stripe versus no bike stripe, like a local street or something like that. And what he found was that if there's a bike stripe, drivers would be closer and they'd be closer more often. So it's this false sense of security. And I think in a lot of cases, in a lot of streets, especially here in Vancouver where we have these, is the streets are narrow enough that a car can't even, if legally, you know, go by you now, even if you're in the bike lane, because there's just not enough room for that. They'd have to go into the other lane, which obviously people won't do. It just doesn't feel natural.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an interesting side note, but.
Yeah. But with a bike lane though, that's a separate lane. So I know the rules, the rules in Calgary, if there is no bike lane, I think it's actually a meter and a half. Like it's a decent distance that you have to take. Like you have to take a pretty wide girth around to get past people in Calgary. But if it's a two lane road and I'm in, you know, the right lane and somebody's passing me in the left lane, that's totally permissible. Like they don't have to worry about the distance. So I'm wondering,
in this law, it says a meter or half a meter
is the same,
but it does say separated and protected cycling lanes, which, I mean, that's not what I think of when I think of a bike stripe, but this is just being pedantic.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So here's this video that we've shared before. Jen wanted to speak on this here.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people in the urbanist community have shared this around, but I think the reality is you don't know what it feels like to be passed by a larger vehicle on a bike until you experience it firsthand. And I think it's such a simple demonstration because it's a, you know, stationary bike and, you know, very predictable scenario. They know what's coming. Everybody's safe. But it's enough to register in the driver's minds, that is really hard, even when you know it's coming. I think it would be really neat if the cities would partner with someone somehow and have this demonstration for the public to try out.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great program to have because it is like it's intimidating. You're basically naked when you're on a bike, right? And like
sometimes literally.
You could be. But in a car, when you're riding in a car, driving a car, you are protected from all of the negative externalities that you are imposing on other people by driving a car. I don't think people should be shamed for driving a car, especially in our cities that kind of force you in a lot of cases, right? They encourage it. We're all going to take the easiest way to get around the places that we need to get around. And if you are fortunate to have the means to pay for a car to get around, you probably will, because my 50-minute bike ride to work or my 15-minute bike or my 15-minute car drive to work, right? Like, those are the options. Or somebody was telling me the other day, she's got a 25-minute drive to work or an hour and a half on the bus. It's like when those are your options, right? Like, if you have the means, of course you're going to choose the car. So I don't want to shame people for driving the car. But when you're driving a car, you are polluting the environment. You're heating the environment. You are, so you're polluting, but you have an air filter. You are heating, but you have an air conditioner. You are creating noise, but you have soundproofing, right? The rubber around your doors and windows, and lots of vehicles have Bose active noise cancellation in them as well. You're protected from the noise you're creating. You are protected from the weight and mass of your vehicle and the vehicles of others through the roll cage, through the airbags, through the drop zone, through all of like the crumple zone, all of these safety features that are for you, the person inside the vehicle. But as a cyclist, I may as well be sucking your tailpipe, right? Like, I may as well be just breathing in all of that exhaust. I'm experiencing the heat that our vehicles that we drive around everywhere are making worse every single year. I am experiencing the noise, right? I might be cycling with a friend, but I can't have a conversation with them because of the road noise, right? So when we're isolated from all of these negative externalities and we don't think about it, right? Of course we don't think about it because we're having a nice drive along. Maybe we're listening to our music, right? Like, it's fine. But I think something like this that Jen just showed us, it's that opportunity to realize, like, oh, you know, there are other people who are not experiencing the world in the same way that I am. And you can see a lot of these things like that. Like, architecture schools will put people in wheelchairs for a day, mm-hmm. and say, like, get around this building. Good luck.
Some real empathy.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And the other half of it is also a lack of consequences. I mean, how many people are doing jail time for hitting pedestrians or cyclists? Well, I think we all know so often the spin in the news is that, well, were they wearing a helmet? Were they wearing high vis? Like, they're not thinking about...
Oh, what was he wearing?
What were they
wearing? What was the cyclist wearing?
Well, and let's say, quote unquote, best case scenario, it's a smaller vehicle like a car that hits somebody on a bike. They roll over the hood. No injuries. The worst case scenario is a couple scratches. I'm not even talking about major dents, a couple scratches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And something I thought about today that really highlights this, what you're both talking about, it's that mentality, that empathy you don't have outside the car is where it actually does matter and where a driver does feel more vulnerable. So I see this all the time. And I know you have alleyways in Vancouver, in Calgary, in the same way that we do here, where there's a lot of these small roadways, these alleyways that cut through sidewalks to get to the road. And these are blind before the sidewalk. So if you're walking along, drivers will fly out of these alleyways and then stop at the road, right? Because they don't, you know, I'm not saying it's on purpose or anything, but they just not that vulnerability to think about the pedestrians that might be walking across this walkway. But you got to watch out for the other cars, because that's going to be, you know, really unpleasant if they get in a car accident with another, a car collision with another car. And I see that all the time. And it makes me think about that and the way that increasing the vehicle size makes people feel safer. So they drive even more unsafe. Yeah.
That played out for me exactly last summer. I was walking to an appointment. And it was the same street, two separate alleyways, almost hit by cars coming out, not stopping at the sidewalk. And that was on top of a previous street where I had the right of way to cross and a truck stopped to yell at me, to take the time to yell at me because they felt that I somehow didn't have the right amount. I don't really understand. Oh, but Jesus. That's three incidences in a, you know, what, 15-minute walk. I thought, should I be out today? Should I cancel this appointment?
Yeah. No, and when it happens so often, you're like, you start to blame yourself. You're like, what am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. Right? And we'll talk about that a bit later, the what grinds my gears. But
Before we get onto my story, just the last note on this, I want to show you one of the multi-use pathways that I use quite often here in Calgary. It's along Heritage Drive. And this multi-use pathway, so if you're coming this way from the reservoir and you're headed towards McLeod Trail, you can get up a fair amount of speed on this pathway because it's headed downhill. But you've got all of these driveways to watch out. And also for some reason, this turns into a sidewalk here. So I always pop off and go like that. But you've got driveways and alleys along here that you've got to watch out for. And some of them, like, they come up pretty quick. And I always super, super slow down because I don't want to get hit.
Yeah. You know what they should do, like they've done in North Vancouver, is add a bunch of speed bumps and chicanes for cyclists.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes,
God.
They did that. Yes. Not for the cars. That is, No.
No. Yeah, the cyclist needs to slow down.
Yeah.
They're the dangerous ones.
Yeah.
And is this a suggested bike route?
Yeah, that is. Well, it's a multi-use pathway.
It's four lanes with several driveways.
Yeah.
And it's a multi-use pathway.
No. You're on a multi-use pathway. The multi-use pathway is beside the four lane road.
Just slightly.
Yeah.
Driveways.
Yeah.
I'm not.
I'm not riding on the road there. It is much, much better than, you know, like other suggested, like bike routes, that just like they put up a blue sign and they're like, yeah, bike here, I guess like less likely to die here. But with that, let's get on to this next story. So the Lilac Festival happened here in Calgary, and this is some good news. We've been kind of, this whole episode is kind of turning into a wug mug, I feel like. But the Lilac Festival, this was its 33rd year, and this is in Calgary, and it's basically, like, it's a, you know, lots of street vendors and stuff come out. Businesses will have their tents up, and there's like a ton of food trucks and stuff. So really, really good time. And I want to highlight, I got this tote bag from the Green Line people at the event. I went to their booth. Their booth was one, it had the biggest lineup out of any of the booths. This is an extremely popular project in Calgary, despite what some people writing op-eds would have you believe. I got a tote bag, and the way that I got it is I went up and I said, hi, I'm the Green Line's biggest fan. And they're supposed to, like, you're supposed to spin a wheel to like figure out like what special thing you got. Did you get a sticker? Did you get, you know? And the tote bags obviously are the most appealing one. So I made sure, I was like, I'm the Green Line's biggest fan. I love what you guys are doing. And I'm so excited for this. And I'm like, I grew up in Mackenzietown, and I just really, I've been waiting my whole life for this. And she's like, this woman, she's like, you're the biggest fan. I'm like, I promise you I am. And so I spun the thing and it landed on like sticker or something. So she hands me a sticker and then she picks up the tote bag and gave it to me.
Awesome.
So I was very, very pleased.
The puppy eyes.
I was like, please give me the tote bag. And I got it. So, the Lilac Festival, they closed off 16 blocks on Sunday. It's a Sunday, so it's quiet anyways, but this is kind of seen as like the official start to like summer in Calgary, is the first Sunday in June. And they closed off 16 blocks. I will share my screen again. I'll share this here. Where did I have that map? So I'll show you those 16
it looks awesome.
Blocks here. Yeah. Yeah.
Big street party.
Yeah. So this whole thing was closed off to cars. Like it was just pedestrians all the way from the Elbow River down here all the way up Fourth, all the way to Central Memorial Park. So that was actually like, it was awesome. It was great to get out. I got some mini donuts, and there are other things that I should have had, but I didn't have a ton of time before work. But yeah, we were cooking out there because it was a gorgeous, gorgeous day. But yeah, it was a good time. And actually, what? 17th Ave? Even two blocks of 17th Ave were pedestrianized? Well, friends, that's right. We're talking about pedestrianizing 17th Ave. Well, guess what? It's already being done. So let me pull up some of the footage that I got. Here we go. Perfect. Yeah, so here's some food trucks. Very nice. But yeah, like people having a great time out here on a pedestrianized 17th Ave. And just showing that like this is possible, like this is something we can do, is closing this street and opening it for people. And of course, people talk about, oh, well, it's really busy, I don't like crowds, that sort of thing. Well, imagine if this was just like how it was every weekend of the whole summer. This is like, it wouldn't be this busy. There are my mini donuts. This is the Green Line. See, look, there's my tote bag that I got. Yeah, so, oh, and look, an ambulance. So that's just some more B-roll that I took that day. Oh, and, you know, cyclists on the bus. Anyways, yeah, so it was a great time. Grand and groovy. Yeah, 16 blocks they closed off this year.
Is that so, every single year they do that?
Yeah, one day. Yeah, and this is the most. This is the most they've ever closed off. Yeah, like it was huge. I don't know if there's numbers on how many showed up. You guys can riff for a second, give some commentary.
And everybody figured out a place to park.
Everybody managed to get there.
They got
yeah,
there
somehow.
And it's not it's close-ish to the train line, so you know it's doable.
Yeah, I think people, you know, overestimate how much they need parking. That's everywhere. Obviously, we have so much parking. But I mean, free parking's, I mean, everybody wants free parking.
Well, I mean, I don't know how familiar the audience is with the Calgary Stampede, which is a big inner city rodeo, which is interesting. But they always have carts going around delivering people from parking lots to the Stampede grounds. So, you know, what's stopping those same carts when it's not Stampede for a couple weeks to be used for the 17th Ave closures, right? Like to go grab the people from surrounding parking lots and get them in. And I don't know. I feel like there are solutions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So 100,000 people showed up to this thing in one. It's just a one day thing. And it's free to show up. So they don't get like perfect tracking of data, but that was their estimate of how many people showed up. And yeah, like I'll, Jen, you mentioned the train. So I'll show how close the train comes to this. Here we go.
The title of this podcast will be Alex Shares Stuff on the Screen.
Alex shares his screen. Seriously. Yeah, so here's the train station. This is the Victoria Park Stampede Station, which actually this is torn down. This train station looks completely different now.
You got a makeover.
Oh, and the BMO Center just opened up today, actually, too. But yeah, so this train station, and then you literally walk over and it's right on 4th Street here. So it's just,
it's like 4 or 5 blocks.
A few blocks away. Yeah. 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 So yeah, like it's just take the train. Every time somebody says, well, but if it's close to cars, how will I get there? I'm like, listen. The train is great for the geometry of events. So take advantage of it.
Yeah, because aren't a lot of the stops like outside of malls and things? There's just like a giant parking lot you can park at. Basically park and rides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a ton of parking rides. Yeah. Like, just come from, like, just drive your car to the free park and ride. You're welcome for subsidizing that. And then just take the train in. Like, you don't need parking on site. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science. There are also lots of buses that go there. People really, I think that's one thing that we can do actively to improve things is encourage some more education on getting around through other modes of transportation. But I'm talking too much. Do you guys have final thoughts? Any more thoughts,
we things you want more, to say about this? More street closures, more pedestrian areas in general, and some of them made semi and permanent. So that'd be nice.
Well, it would be very nice. Kind of looping together the how easy it is for people to get to Lilac Festival from that particular train stop and the 17th Ave pedestrianization potentially on the weekends. Long game that the Victoria Park Stampede Station is going to be right beside a, basically 17th Ave is now going to go straight through into the Stampede grounds, and they're calling it the Entertainment District, which it's just more of a reason to pedestrianize because it'll be even easier. They could, like I said, very easily create a system of park at the Entertainment District end where there are, of course, they're going to maintain parking over there and pick up one of the whatever, like I said, trolleys or something that can just keep looping up 17th and it'll become an attraction, a tourist attraction, and really draw people in.
Which, on that note, follow on Sprawling, because we have some things that we're thinking about and working on with regards to literally all of what Jen just said. But Nick, you've got another story for us.
Yeah, this is coming from Business Insider. A man sold his backyard for $100,000. And why is that a big deal? That's because a startup actually bought it. And this startup called Build Casa is building homes by splitting lots. So there was a new bill that came out in California. I think it's like SB9 or something. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, this bill allows people to split their lots. And this is a good thing for building density in old neighborhoods, especially in California where there's tons of sprawl. We know that much. And yeah, this guy, he lives in this small house, a little bungalow, 3-bedroom, 1-bath. It's about 1,100 square feet. But he's got this quarter acre lot with this huge backyard that he doesn't use, like a lot of people don't use. And it just so happens that where it's situated, it's on this corner lot, so it can face, this backyard faces another street. So I thought that was pretty cool. It's not a huge thing. This isn't going to be the solution, but these are going to be extra drops in the bucket to help with housing affordability, because we know that's a big problem across the world right now, especially in Canada and the United States. So yeah. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I dig that. It's a creative solution, which I love. And it's great. I'm assuming whatever zoning in this area allows for this to happen as well, which is good to see. Because I think to solve this crisis, we need to think creatively, because to get into it, we thought very basically and one size fits all. And that one size was the single detached home. So it's cool to see to see this happening. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's cool. We were seeing more of it with the grandma suites, the ADUs and things like that. But this is something that usually happens at a whole partition. Like, somebody will buy the property and split it up into two or three parcels, right? I've never seen this before where people are cutting up their land and selling off parts of it. Now, I'm curious more about this Build Casa. I've only looked into it slightly, this company, and I thought maybe he would sell it privately or something. But basically, this company is literally just buying parts of lots and building on them and then selling the property. And then they're giving people cash up front, like a small amount of cash, and then they're paying them whatever the whole amount over 6 months. So in this guy's case, $100,000. Now, I want to know more. Is like, are they building multi-unit houses, or is this just more single family homes? Like, I suspect on a property this small, it's probably going to be a single family home, but either way, that's more density in somewhere where it was stuck, locked, right?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, stuck is a good word for it. Locked up, you know, on our lawns, on, you know, these really underused places. And I'm not saying everybody's lawn is underused. My neighbor's got an amazing garden. We've started gardening here too. But yeah, there's a lot of places where it's like, oh, we could use that better. Like, we could do something better than what we have been.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there was something, he was talking to his mother about this. This man, he's not a young man. So this nice old lady, his mother said, you should give some of this thought. So the idea of selling part of his land, you don't do anything with the backyard and you're always complaining about affordable housing for people in Sacramento. You might as well be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. So yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. And I really like that, because these creative solutions like this and looser zoning regulations, it permits individual people to be part of the solution.
Yeah.
And it helps with that. Jen, what do you think of this?
I think it's so exciting. I like that they approached these folks, right? Because some people might be completely willing but have never considered the options, or, you know, they are overwhelmed with the idea of doing the development themselves. Maybe they've considered it, but they're thinking like, oh, I don't know where you would start. But to have folks sort of proactively going out and saying, hey, we notice you've got a good chunk of property. Here are some ideas, some things you could do with it. Thinking back to the Calgary City Council and all of those presentations, there was a group of developers that were showing these incredible examples of repurposing existing large homes split into multi-units and some really incredible backyard units and you know, very modern, sophisticated, and that perfect middle ground that we're looking for in so many of our large city centers, where, you know, you've got the working professional, they work from home, they don't need to have a full-on single-family home property, but they would like something that's kind of in between, you know, not the apartment building, but not the single family home either. And yeah, some of the solutions they showed on the screen, I went, wow, I want to live in these things. And it doesn't look disruptive or bothersome to the other part of the home that they're building around, which is also great to see. So
yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, so hopefully we see more of stuff like this just happening. The creative solution you were mentioning there, Jen, about the larger single family home that was kind of like subdivided a little bit into separate units. That was an architect who presented that, and they had, you know, one of those bigger suburban Calgary homes with like a front car garage and stuff. But at their firm, they worked on kind of these creative solutions to say, like, this is how we can add additional kind of sneaky density without it being noticeable. But we suddenly turned this place into three units of varying sizes that maybe, you know, this is for the family, and then this is for their, you know, mom and dad, and then this is for one of their kids when they kind of grow up and need their own space, right? Like, these creative solutions that we're doing, and I think we're going to see more and more of that coming out, and I'm really, really excited. I'll have to get the name of the firm and see if I can find those pictures, because it was really, really cool. Really cool stuff.
I like the idea of these smaller lots too, right? Because I'm always thinking about this book that I just read. It's The Escaping the Housing Trap by Strong Towns, Chuck Marone, and his co-writer. And it's just like, we don't make starter homes anymore. Like, you think about all of the new subdivisions you go to, they're all of these like 4 or 5, 2.5 bath houses. They're massive with like a finished or unfinished basement. It's like, people need to start somewhere, and that's not where they're going to start. I don't know, you know, how people would be able to do that, especially in this economy. It's insane. Even in here in Vancouver, it's like trying to afford a 2-bedroom condo is like impossible for a lot of people now. Like, can't even afford rent. But It would be nice if we had options where you could just buy something that's smaller and it's more amenable to a small family.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be fantastic. With that, should we get on to listener mail?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, let's do it. I'll read this first one. It comes in from a listener. They haven't commented before. I'm not even sure if we know who this person is at all. But it's Jen Hall. Jen Hall commented on our last video. Thanks, Jen, for joining us. Jen is a Patreon, a patron. She's a Patreon subscriber. Okay, listen.
There was an off-record wug mug that happened before the show.
Yeah. So, Jen is one of our patrons.
I like patronizing you, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And she listens to the show live. Actually, and comments live as well. And you can, too, if you go to patreon.com/radiofreeurbanism, I think is the link. You can also write into us at radiofreeurbanism@gmail.com. We like getting emails. And you can also comment on the YouTube channel and kind of join in on that conversation down there if you're watching this on YouTube. But Jen always leaves us a really great question. And this one was actually a fun one. I was thinking about it all week. And the question is, you're on a tandem bike together. What order are you sitting in and why? And I thought this was a really good question. I've got my answer mentally locked and loaded. So maybe we'll go Nick, then Jen, then me.
Now,
how does that sound?
Maybe before we answer, can someone pull up a picture of a tandem bike? So,
oh yeah.
And for those that won't be able to see this, it's a bike where you can have three riders, front, middle, back. Of course, the front is controlling the ship. This is a variable we need to think about.
Yeah. So that's what I think about on a tandem bike. I've only been on a two-seater tandem bike once with my wife last summer. We wanted to try it and we went for it. We rented one and it was a lot of fun. But we learned really quickly the person at the front should be the person who's leading the ship, but also pushes the most power out. That's what we found with my, because she'd be, on the bike and she's just like la di da di da. And I'm just like powering through, right? And when I was on the back, it just didn't go very well. That's what we found. So the person with the most oomph, in their step should maybe be at the front.
Be at the front. Yeah. All right, Nick. So who's got the most oomph in their
That's
step?
That's going to be me for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick is definitely at the front. Okay, who's next, Nick?
Who's next? Ooh, yeah. That's tough. We're talking about like Ethan, you and me, right?
Yeah. And then we'll swap Ethan out for Jen too, since she's here.
Okay. Well, that's tough. That's a tough one. That's a coin flip. I think it'd be a tester, but I put Ethan for sure in the middle.
In the middle first, and then
if it didn't work out, then we'd swap you.
I'm at the back because I'm a weak little baby. Is that why?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Okay, Jen.
Yeah, what about, I think there will be a trend of Nicks at the front.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, pardon me, I'm not sure because, I guess no matter what, middle and back have to deal with anyone's flatulence. Like, that's going to happen no matter
what. That's true.
But what is the benefit of the very back versus the middle? I'm going to say I want to be in middle because, if we're talking about weather scenarios, a little bit protected. That's my only theory.
I think that makes sense. I see you guys were talking about like an actual tandem bike, like riding the tandem bike, but I was thinking like the show,
a metaphorical
like
if
the
bike?
Show, yeah, metaphorical tandem bike. So I was like, what like if we recorded Radio Free Urbanism on a tandem bike live from a tandem bike in Tokyo, Japan. It's metaphorical. Okay. So if that's what we're doing, Nick would also be on the front of that bike. This show was Nick's idea.
And also, Nick, I speak Japanese, so you know I need to be able to read the signs.
That's true. It's true. So Nick directs us. Nick is the king of this this podcast.
But you direct the show as we're doing it live.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'll get to that. So Nick is definitely at the front. He's steering the ship. He brought Ethan and I together. He pulled up with his tandem bike with his three seater, and he's like, "Hey kids, hop on." And I just made you sound older than you are. then we get on, but Ethan is in the middle. So definitely Ethan is next on the list. Okay. And Ethan, he's not pedaling as hard as Nick. He's just not. But what he is doing is talking about how much better it would be if we were taking a bus or some form of transit. Cause Ethan is our transit guy. And then I'm at the back. I don't even realize that we're on a bike, but I am throwing candy at the people we pass. I'm not pedaling. I'm not doing anything. I'm facing backwards and I'm throwing candy at the crowds. And I feel like that's how it goes. And Jen, I think Jen would just take Ethan's spot. Although Jen does ride a bike. So yeah. I don't know, but Jen's definitely our middle person. I'm at the back throwing candy at people, with additional unnecessary, superfluous and, redundant adjectives. Yeah, that's how I would arrange our tandem bike. Thanks for listening to my story.
I could just not imagine being on a three-person tandem bike. I feel like it's hard enough doing it with two people, getting that coordination right in the yeah. balance.
Have you seen that tandem bike band?
No.
Maybe I have. Okay.
I don't know. I saw a guy playing the drums at a Critical Mass this past week on a cargo bike. So the guy was on the front playing the drums. It's like red. Bucket drums, but yeah, he was going for it.
Here, I'll pull this up here.
We need a Jamie. Pull that up, Jamie.
Oh,
oh my God.
There we go. Yeah, see, I'm the guy at the back. You're
playing the bass. Except in, okay.
Yeah, instead of playing the bass, though, I'd be throwing candy.
So it's like a polka band on a bike.
That's yeah, look how sweet. Fun that is.
That's cool.
These guys are going no hands. Just going to need one right? guy to steer. Is he playing anything, or is he just the driver?
No, I think he's just the driver. Nice. That's so cool, though. Look, oh man, that's teamwork. Yeah. I just appreciate look at this that.
Nice pedestrian, quiet street. You get to ride down.
Right. You too could have a band on a tandem bike if you pedestrianized your streets. That should be part of
the
pitch.
It's true. Maybe we could get them the first day next year that we pedestrianize 17th Ave. Maybe we could get them in from Poland.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Yeah, so that's our tandem bike question. That was a really good question, Jen. I liked that question a lot.
As always. And, always so good.
Nick, do you want to read our next listener question?
This is here? From Sean Endo, and they said, what if we cut down carbon emissions by building a gondola to transport fans to motorsports events? So this is in response to last week. We talked about Charles Leclerc, who was riding his electric bike after winning the Monaco Grand Prix. F1 driver, Charles Leclerc. Big fan. Anyway, this is interesting. Gondolas, it depends on where they're going. I don't know if the racetrack is up a mountain or deep in a ravine. I suppose that could work. But I think the solution to our emissions and the cutting them down is just to make better public transportation, making safer options for active transportation too. That's all we need.
Yeah.
Gondolas have their place though, right? Because last week we talked about gondolas with Arden English of the Greater Discussions, talking about the Simon Fraser University gondola because it is on top of a mountain, essentially. So that's a place where it's very useful.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. What do you think of gondolas, Jen?
I think they're great.
Yeah.
It actually, going back to the Calgary Stampede, they've got a gondola set up, which is more of just a ride. Like, I'm not sure if people are actually using it to get from point A to point B, but clearly people like it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could see there being a gondola stretching from one end of 17th to the next. Like, what a cool experience to be up there and you see all of the people on the ground having a good time. And I don't know, gondolas are great.
Yeah. Yeah, gondolas are pretty cool. And there's different, like, there's different types of gondolas, right? Like, there's, like, a ski gondola, right? There's also, like, the gondola in Banff. That's, like, a small glass car type gondola. Yeah, so I think, though, this is my thought on the motorsports gondola. I think, what if you had, like, the big kind of actual transit gondolas with, like, glass floors that you could look out
over? That would be pretty cool.
The racetrack.
Mm. So
that'd be cool.
It's a thing. It's a thing, apparently. Awesome. I just found this out. So at the Miami Grand Prix, which happens outside the Hard Rock Stadium where the Dolphins play, the Miami Dolphins, I didn't know this, there are gondolas that go over the track with glass floors over the F1 track. So I don't know if that's a permanent installation or it's just a temporary one they have during the Grand Prix in Miami. But yeah, I mean, it's not. Is it public transportation? Yeah, it's a giant parking lot. Maybe it gets from one end to the other. But yeah, it goes right over the track. That's pretty cool.
That's great.
That is pretty cool.
Maybe one day I'll get to go check it out.
Well, it's a good solution for the people that are complaining about, oh, we can't, we need all of the roads to stay, etc. Like, well, okay, let's go up. Gondola it up.
Yeah. See, I like this. What if, okay, hear me out. What if we just instead, like, started putting hooks on the top of our cars and then they could, like, hook onto the gondola and your car would just turn into a gondola and you just, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I can see places where it might work. You know, I'm thinking about trains that take cars places in Europe, but.
Yeah, the best mode of transportation is your primary mode of transportation, and that is your feet. Nick, do you want to share your wug mug?
I think so. What grinds my gears? I got something that grinds my gears, and it's in relation to something that happened last weekend. And what it is the attitude people have, and I don't want to just say drivers, but the attitude people have towards road safety and road violence. Because it happens all the time. We talk about this drip, drip, drip that happens across the world. And the number that always gets brought up is in the United States, with something almost 45,000 people killed every year. And it's something we don't really think about that much. We see on the news certain accidents happening, road blockages, and occasionally we talk about traffic deaths. But usually, like I've said before, it's more in this context of a human relations, a human interest story about the resilience of people after tragedy, as opposed to really trying to get down to fix this problem, which is a problem. But in just day-to-day life, the actual nonchalant nature and attitude people have towards road violence is really disturbing. So what brought this up was this past weekend, I was on my electric scooter and I was going somewhere to pick something up downtown. And I ended up in a gutter bike lane. And as I was riding, coming up to an intersection, a big box truck passed me just before the intersection and then turned right for a right hook, right? So I had to slam on my brakes, like really slam off my scooter, almost fell over, scared shitless, probably swore in out loud. And as we talked about previously in recent episodes about not freaking out, took just a cool breath. I was like, okay, I'm okay. I'm safe. Didn't get hurt. But I decided I'm just going to go to this person, politely say, can you please check your mirrors? Like, that's it. So I followed them a couple blocks. They stopped and I just knocked and I said, hey, can you just please check your mirrors? You almost hit me. We want to be safer or whatever. I was just being really chill. And she just looks at me, gives me this look and goes, you followed me just to tell me that? And I was just like, you almost killed me. Like, and that's it. And I just took off. I was like, I'm going to freak out. I'm like, just leave. And I just couldn't believe that just flippant attitude. You followed me just to tell me that? Like, obviously, I had a lot of choice words I wanted to say, but again, trying to stay cool. I'm getting riled up just thinking about it. But it grinds my gears. It's just insane. Like, it's not safe out there. And we need to take this shit seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. Amen. Like, it's the same thing that we kind of talked about a couple weeks ago, I think, when you're in the crosswalk and somebody doesn't see you and they drive through and then they see you at the last second and they turn and they look at you and they give the little oopsies. Yeah. like, oh, sorry, my bad. And it's like, it's we have a complete dissociation and lack of awareness about how actually dangerous our vehicles are. We're completely removed from that reality, from those negative externalities, that then when we do make a mistake, we don't realize like the potential consequences that mistake could have had, right? We rely almost entirely on luck when we're driving. And I think we really, really need to be more aware, of the risks associated. And unfortunately, it is so ingrained in us as just like, well, that's the way we get around. And when somebody dies, when somebody gets hit, it's their fault. It's what were they wearing? They weren't paying attention. Well, they should get a car, right? Like it's all of these other things that we bring up in order to just not have the real conversation that, listen, like giant metal boxes are dangerous. That's it.
Yeah.
Like you're moving these things at, you know, 20 to 100 kilometers an hour, depending what road you're on, depending where you are, right? Like, and you just like, oopsie, sorry, you followed me just to tell me to check my mirrors? Yeah, of course I did. Like, you almost killed me.
Yeah. Like, these happen all the time. Like, I'm sure anybody who rides a bike regularly has near misses. Relatively frequently.
Anybody who walks.
Or walks. If you're outside of
a car. Go walk through a parking lot.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it's so easy for you to, if you don't pay attention, you will get hit. You will be injured. You may die if you don't pay attention. You have to be on a swivel. Yeah. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have to be. You should be trying to be careful. But why aren't we all trying to be careful? Why aren't we changing our environment to make it safer, to make it easier to make the right choices? Because that is a terrible bike lane, like having a bike stripe right beside a street. There's no protection.
Yeah.
You come to the intersection and unless they're looking right in their mirror, which again, she passed me. So like she would have seen me or should have seen me anyway. It comes back to the whole thing of changing our environment. Like the ghost bike I talked about on that we visited on the Critical Mass. They're not changing. They have no plans to change that intersection. They have no plans to change that street. Why not? Why not? Why isn't there a postmortem? Why isn't there an inquest to figure out how we can make it safer? Why did that happen? And how can we make sure it never happens again? We don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, and the cars themselves, the manufacturers spend, like, that is their selling point, especially with new cars, because they're running out of things to, you know, separate one from the other. But it's all about comfort and making the drivers and the passengers not feel like they are driving a substantial piece of machinery. Imagine, well, I mean, the closest to you know, really knowing how fast you are and what environment you're in, I think would be a motorcycle. But even the helmets are designed to, dampen things down. But at least they have a sense of the speed, feeling the wind, you know, a little bit closer to the environment. And so, you know, it's so irresponsible that the manufacturers are allowed to make the vehicle so comfortable. They shouldn't be comfortable. I think Alex has mentioned this in past episodes. They shouldn't be comfortable. I mean, pedestrians and cyclists are criticized if they wear headphones, earphones, especially noise canceling. So it should be the same with vehicles, where if you're driving, the vehicle should be in quote-unquote transparency mode. Sounds need to be fed in. You need to know what's happening around you.
Yeah. And I think Chuck Marone said it once on his podcast, and he talked about putting a spike in the steering wheel instead of an airbag, because then you'd have consequences if you got in an accident type of thing, right?
Yeah.
The playing fields.
And in your scenario, I'm sure when you were braking, your whole system is reacting like my mortality is potentially at risk here, and you know that's a pretty intense sensation, whereas if she noticed, at most it was a feeling of inconvenience, like it's not comparable at all. So it's like no wonder her response was so whatever. because the reaction will never be the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe there can be something installed into cars that, like, every time you pass a cyclist too close, maybe the driver's seat will shake violently just to give you some sense of what it feels like. Because it's scary. Like, it's not even like we're not joking when we say that it's scary. Like, come for a bike ride with me. If you're in Calgary and you're listening to if you've gotten this far, I don't need to sell you on anything. But honestly, if you're somebody who is aware of this, and you're talking to somebody who isn't, who maybe doesn't understand, tell them, like, hey, come for a bike ride with me. Let me show you a few variations on bike infrastructure, and let me show you what that feels like to ride on the road, just to give that little extra, you know, empathy, right? Let me help you understand what it feels like to have a car pass you. Like,
and there's probably... You know, right? Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Find an empty parking lot. One of you is the driver. One of you just stand still in the parking lot and have the other pass by slowly. You don't even need speed to realize that's not, oh my God, that thing's huge passing by me. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, well, it's only like a small amount of people who are comfortable doing that. It's that 1%, around probably 1% of the population entirely that are comfortable riding beside fast cars. It is people. There are people, but it's so minutely small. And it's a big reason why people aren't getting on two wheels. They don't feel comfortable because they intuitively know it's not safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we've had a really wug-muggy episode.
There was some good stuff in there. There was a couple.
Which I appreciate. This has been therapeutic. We did have some good news that we shared with people. So let's go around real quick. Where can we find you? Where are you, Nick?
Where am I? I'm right here. I'm in Vancouver. No.
Oh my goodness. Where are you?
If you want to find me, you can find me on YouTube at Nick Laporte or on other social media platforms at Nick the Door. How about Jen? Thank you for joining us. I need to say that. It's nice to actually talk to you on the show, because last time Ethan was on and I was in Asia or something. But anyway, can you give any plugs that you need to?
Thanks, Nick. It's at Hull's Emporium on everything. That's the predominant one for
awesome.
Me.
Yeah. I forgot that Ethan was here the last time Jen was here, so it was fun to switch it up. I'm glad you were able to join us last minute like this. It's been fantastic and delightful. And you can find me at Humane Cities on Instagram and YouTube. And also on Sprawling. Follow on Sprawling. We've got some really cool stuff cooking, especially if you liked the Calgary talk right now. But with that, I'll let Nick start us off with the closing. Jen knows how we
change this up. All right. Cars bad, trains good.
Oh no.
And then Jen, you say two wheels good.
I was thinking I was doing trains. I'm like, trains, it's trains, right?
All right, you start.
Two wheels good, two wheels good.
Okay, and first feet.
The show is made possible by listeners like you. For access to early episodes, live shows, and other perks, join us on Patreon at Radio Free Urbanism.